Now you.
Emily Stevens, Reel 4. Could you tell me what you thought of the sanitary arrangements in married quarters?
Well, I thought it was absolutely terrible. There wasn't any sanitary arrangements there. Man used to come in the morning and in the evening, and actually all as we had was a commode and a little potty for the children. And there was no running water. And for a bath, I told you before, was like a curb, something like you have on the edge of a pavement. And a bath stood in there, and there was a hole through the wall where the water used to run away, and then it would go down perhaps in some places into the middle of the quarters, into the, like, over where the cookhouse was, over that one.
So you weren't satisfied with the sanitary arrangements at all?
Well, it's all they had, and all we ever had was something after that style. It was never anything really nice.
Could you tell me how you spent a typical day in married quarters, from getting up, you know, what time you got up, and take me through a day to sort of...
Yes, well, Rivali would go, and your husband would get up, and he would go on parade, which you usually got up with him because that was the best time of the day. And perhaps we would go to the bazaar.
What time did you get up?
Oh, about 6:30, 7 o'clock. And we would perhaps go to the bazaar because you had to do anything out when it was... before the sun really got up, before it got too hot. And perhaps we would go to the bazaar or do our washing. But it wasn't too bad to do the washing when we came back because the sun never really got too hot in the quarters. We were hot, but we were able to do a certain amount of work at that. But you couldn't go out, no families went out. The children went to school at 9 o'clock and they would have a lorry to take them, and perhaps an orderly corporal would escort the children to school. And they would come back 12 o'clock like they do here, and their schooling was finished for the day. And out of that they would have certain amount of PTs, even the children would, and football. So they didn't really have an awful lot of education. Now, by the way, this bungalow is named after the school that they went to in India, Margala.
Where was that?
In Rawalpindi.
So you weren't satisfied at all with the arrangements which were made by the army for your children's education?
Well, it was very poor, and I came home, an order came out that any family wishing to return to the United Kingdom, I came home in 36, did I? And my husband came
37.
My husband came 37, didn't he? I came 36. An order came out in 1935 that any family wishing to return to the United Kingdom could do, but we wouldn't get any quarter allowance. But we would get a marriage allowance, but not quarter allowance. And so we took that up and I brought the children home to school. I came home a year before my husband. To just get the children at 10 years old, they need a little bit more education.
Were the children themselves happy at school or unhappy?
Oh, I think they were happy at school. And they used to lay on their bed in the afternoon with their exercise book, or we might be giving them a little bit of homework. But there again, travelling was a good education for them. I think that it done them good. They've all been able to get on very well in England.
What type of things would you be doing during the day yourself?
Oh, I would cook the lunch and help clean the place out. It was an awful dusty place. We used to get a lot of sandstorm in there. We were everlasting cleaning up. And covers and that always wanted washing. We would, perhaps one of the other families would come in and have a cup of coffee with us in the morning. Perhaps I would go and visit some of them. I might. One station we were in, there was only one other lady with me in Rizalburg, and I don't know what we used to do. We used to pass the time of day. We never really got bored, because even in England in that time there wasn't wireless, was there? No such thing as television. My husband and I used to play cards sometimes.
You said that you were a very keen tennis player.
Yeah.
Could you tell me about that and any other sports that you used to do?
Tennis, we'd start getting ready at 4 o'clock, perhaps 5 o'clock, and we used to go and play tennis. If we were up the hills, it was cooler, and we would go in the afternoon, and we would have tennis tournaments. And we would take a bottle or a tin of something, and then the one that won, you know, the would be first and second prize. And then there was dances. And when we were in Upper Topa, the clergyman there, it was Reverend McCormack. I think he's wrote a lot of books, and I think he went as the Old Bird. Have you heard of him? The Old Bird.
Who is
he
it?
Used to call himself. This was the vicar in Upper Topa. And he used to arrange whist drives for the families and the troops. And he had a big marquee. And he was ever so kind to all of them, and he would have a concert party for them, and we used to pay a little, but not much to go to them. But I'm sure there's a lot of books that Reverend McCormack has wrote, and I think he went, and they used to call him the Old Bird. I think you'd find some of them about now.
Did you do any other sports besides tennis?
Oh, Acton the Fool would play hockey, and the ladies would play against the men. But I was no good at hockey, and I'd give my opponents a goal. But tennis was my game. I preferred tennis to anything, because we used to have dances and dinner parties and that.
Did you just play tennis against European ladies?
Oh yes, amongst the amongst the sergeant's mess. Oh, we never played tennis with the Indians. I suppose you can't understand that, but we never had much to do with them in our social life at all. In the mess, they would be working in the bar or anything like that.
You said that when you were playing tennis you played with the other army wives.
Mm.
But did playing tennis bring you into contact with other Europeans in India, like servants? Or
it could do. It could have done. Not so much the civil servants. The only time we would have a lot of would be when we were in Karachi, and perhaps one of the boats would come in, and they would send an invitation to the sergeant's mess for the wives and families to go perhaps to a tea party or dancing or something like that. Well, the signals and that used to have a tournament amongst the adults, started to play the corporals on the wives, because there was corporals' wives out there as well, you see, and sometimes the officers would give a party to the sergeants and vice versa. Not every week, but occasionally.
So, would it be true to say that you didn't see a lot of Europeans who were not in the army?
Not an awful lot. In Karachi we would meet them, but then those people are perhaps taking their retirement out there, and they would have an invitation to the mess. Perhaps they would still be mess members, and we would meet some then. The lady that kept the seaman's rest, I didn't know her name. I know her daughter married a Sergeant Wedgbury in the signals, and she was very good, the mother was, to the family. It was nice to have some elderly lady to speak to sometimes.
Why was that?
Well, I expect even your wife now would like to have advice to some lady sometimes older than herself, wouldn't she? And you must realise that your education of today is different to what it was when we were educated. You knew more, didn't you? You know more now than what we did. Our education wasn't all that good. As long as we could reckon up, and we were all brought up to work.
Was it also because you missed your family a great deal?
I did miss my family. Of course, we all did. All families miss their families. And then when you come home to England and you've got a little family, even your families get fed up with your children. It was very hard at times when we came home. Take the Quetta earthquake. We were out there then. And a lot of the quarters were damaged. Actually, there was no lives lost in the signals, but the CO said all families must go home. You can't stay here. The smell and that. There were so many in the city that was damaged so badly, and they sent them home. And some of the people just had a change in their clothing. And when they got to England, they were given £25 to get to their destination. They had to go and live with some of their relatives. And perhaps some of them had two or three children. And until their money came through, they were given £25. And you see what they get now when they come home.
Could I ask you about what relations were like between wives like yourself, wives of sergeants, and wives of other ranks and officers' wives? Did your husband's rank make much difference about how you got on with all you ladies?
Well, don't think I've got a big head, but always got on well with all of them. The sergeant, the other sergeant's wives, the signalman's wives, and even the general's wife. I don't know if it was because I was out there a long time. And of course my children was quite, it was beginning to get quite grown up just before I came home. That, no, we were just one big family to me. And when I came home, that's what I missed more than anything, was the comradeship. For an instant, the children, everybody was their aunties and uncle. And I couldn't make them understand when they came home that everybody in England wasn't their aunties and uncles. People in Rotten, even today, remember, they would, children in at school would call them Indians. "Go on back, we don't want you," they'd say to my children when they started school in England. And they would go up to any lady and they would say, "Auntie, they won't leave me alone. They keep hitting me, these children do." But it wasn't long before my children were just one of them.
So you were really, all the ladies in the army were quite close and sort of like...
Well, they were where we belonged to, yes. Yes. I think you have to put yourself out a little bit to... just the same as we do today. We always have... We've always got plenty of friends. We always have plenty of friends there.
But your husbands were in different messes, weren't they? There was a sergeant's mess, there was an officer's mess, there was other ranks mess. Didn't that stop you ladies mixing together? Because you as the wife of a sergeant wouldn't be allowed in the other ranks mess or the officer's mess, would you?
I know that people say it carried on amongst the ranks and that, but I don't see it myself. I never saw that going on. It may have done in some places. Perhaps it did in Royal Pindi, perhaps, when there was A Corps and B Corps of the signals, but I don't think that it was too bad. I have seen it in Canspur. There was two regiments. Don't ask me what they were because I couldn't tell you. One was KRs or something or other. And they were all in a mess one night. And all these officers and were in the sergeant's mess. And somebody said, "Scrum down for a bottle of beer." And they did. And my husband just took me out and took me home. They did. I think it got more to a scrum than anything, you know, more like a rugby match. But that was the only time I saw it.
As a sergeant's wife, were you allowed into the officer's mess?
Oh, not without an invitation, no. You wouldn't think of going, would you, without an invitation? I suppose things just came natural to me. I didn't expect it. I don't know.
But you were invited?
Oh, occasionally, yes.
And into the other ranks mess?
Oh, yes. I've gone and helped served at the men's lunch. The CO has said, "I want to make them think of home. Would you come and just help serve their Christmas pudding?" We've gone and done it for them. Even the officers and that, they've done all they could to help their men, I think. I don't know about it on parade, but in social life, if one of the families was ill, there would be a lovely bunch of flowers come to the hospital and that from some... And the officer's wife. And the officer's wife would come in if they were walking out and come in and, oh, just called in for a cup of coffee. And I don't know if I'm an exception. I don't know what other people's opinion is, but this is how I found it. I'd like to tell you about when I gave birth to my third son. Could I tell you about
Certainly.
That? Well, we were in Canspur, and my husband had been on the operations, and he came up, and he was very ill. He'd had a nervous breakdown. He'd been on duty for 24 hours a day. I think he told you about that. But he came up the hill, and I was pregnant, and I'd been to the hospital, and they told me that I would have this baby in September. we'd had two little boys, and we did want this other baby because we did so want a little girl. And the first week in October came and no baby. And the medical officer said, oh, I don't know what to do with you. I want you to have this baby in Canspar. And in the end, he sent me to marry. Well, the Hill Station used to start on the 15th of April to the 15th of October. That was for us to go to the hills. Then we would go down to the plains as it was cooler. And a week before the 25th of October, I should add this date for you, a week before, to the very day, we travelled from Canspar to Murray. And there was a track for mules and their packs. And then there was what they used to call the hospital pipeline, where only hospital cases were allowed. And after leaving Barrianne, it was only a track, it wasn't a road to Canspar. We were more or less on the foothill of the Himalayas. And I went in this carrying chair, my husband had a horse, and my two little boys had this carrying chair. There was like four Indians carrying this chair, two at the bottom, two at the top. We went along this pipeline. And it was the bottom, you could just see the height of the fir trees, and all of the rock was at the other side. And there was no shelter. It was just, I really got a job to explain to you what it was like. But when we had 7 miles to go along this track, and I suppose we'd done perhaps 5 miles, and it looked as if we were going to get a terrible storm, and we did. And these Indians told us we mustn't go no further. We had to go under this rock, and we all got under this rock, and it hailed, thundered, lightning, and the hailstones was as big as a sixpence piece, you know, the old sixpence piece, and they all lay on the floor covered in it, and it rained. It was terrible. We were so fed up. And then when we got to Barrianne, we had a cup of coffee under this rock, and we all crouched under this rock, and we had a thermos flask, and I suppose we were there about an hour, and then the storm went on, and we went on. And then we got to Barrianne, and we were able to get a taxi, so these men all went back. We didn't have to pay them, they were paid by someone else. We gave them a tip. And then we got... And then we got in this taxi, and we went to Murray. We were going into what they used to call Murray quarters, waiting quarters. And we paid the taxi. We went more like through an allotment affair. I don't know. It was pretty wild. And we found the quartermaster, and he said, hey, what are you doing here? So we said, the medical officer wouldn't be responsible for us. And so we're here, and that's it. He said, well, you're no business to be here till Monday. He said, there's your quarters up there, such and such a number, and I'll send you up a bag of coal. And you can guess how I felt. Another week to go before my baby was born. And nothing in the quarter. All lit with oil lamps. We filled our oil lamps and we got our beds down. And then we went to the Majestic, which wasn't far away, and had something to eat.
Was it a restaurant?
Yes, it was a restaurant. And on the Monday, went to the hospital. I went to report I wouldn't worry them on Sunday, you know, or on. And I went there, and the greetings was, "You women are nothing but a nuisance. Why don't you arrange to have your babies at different times? This hospital is closed. And you're a nuisance." I never forgot it. Instead of a kind word, couldn't help it. I thought we shouldn't be going to have babies, but I think at times we were just a nuisance to the army. I think at times.
Still it is.
Yes, I think so. I suppose they did what they could for us. And they had to have certain facilities for us. But they hadn't had the facilities that we should have had. After all, we were all human.
What was it like having a baby in India? You know, having a pregnancy and all the business of having a baby. Can you tell me about how you were treated and what kind of facilities you had?
In the hospital, we were treated very well, really. And we were inspected just like they do here. The doctor looked after us. But a lot of the nurses and that, I think they used to like to go dancing and that sometimes, you know. That an Indian nurse wasn't allowed near us, not an eye or anything, because when I was going to have John, that was this one that I told you about. It was funny that I started labour, and I said to my husband, "I shall have to go to the hospital." This was at 5 o'clock in the morning, and he said, "Oh, I'll wake the boys up and bring the boys with you." I said, "But you can't wake the boys up. I'll be all right. I'll go up on my own." And I took a few odds and ends, a little case, a towel, and the baby's gown, and to nighty and that for myself. And I went up to this place on my own, and there was jackals all howling. And we had to pass the men's hospital before going past the ladies' hospital. And I thought, I mu-